What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Plant the Spear Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and welcome to the show. Hope you guys are all doing well out there after the bye week. Hope you enjoyed a stress-free Saturday of not having to worry about whether FSU was going to win or not, and just kind of being able to watch everyone else play, which is sometimes that's just the best way to have a Saturday. You know, just no stress, nothing to worry about. I actually took the bye week to go on vacation, went up to the mountains with my wife, did all the fall things that, you know, we just enjoy doing, and kind of off the grid for a couple days, so that was a little nice. Really didn't even have a lot of cell phone service on Saturday to keep up with things, so by the time I got back into town and back to our hotel and was able to check on the scores, obviously there were some interesting ones that we're going to talk about. So with that being said, this is, like I said, this is going to be just some thoughts on the weekend that was the bye week, some of the things we saw from Florida State opponents, as well as the Georgia Tech preview. Florida State opened as a 20-plus point favorite. I believe it's up to around 23 points now over the Yellow Jackets of Georgia Tech, who they will be taking on inside Doak Campbell Stadium at noon on Saturday. This is a team that you feel good about Florida State being able to win against and get a hopefully a convincing win to get things back on track and, you know, just right the ship in that three-game skid and get ready for a, you know, just a really big rivalry game next week that you also feel like you should be able to win. So before we get into the full-on preview, let's go ahead and just I'm going to share some thoughts on some things over the weekend. There was also some news that we're going to mention. First up is going to be the Charlotte head coaching job vacancy. Naturally, we know Alex Atkins came from Charlotte, so there was ties to his name being mentioned for the position. Now, you know, to be fair, like if he has aspirations to be head coach, he's familiar with the area. He, you know, is familiar with the school. Charlotte is a pretty good location as far as recruiting. You know, you're right there kind of in the middle of the East Coast, in the middle of the Carolinas. It's a pretty large area with some good high school football in that area. I would hate to see Atkins take it. Obviously, you don't want to see him go. He's one of the best coaches that you have on staff, one of the best recruiters. But, you know, everybody has goals and aspirations, and so if he feels, you know, if he feels the calling to go be a head coach, then I guess we'll have to see how that plays out. But he did address it in press conference this week and basically said that, you know, that's social media talk, and while he's flattered and honored, he's just not sure that that's going to be the case quite yet. So, and to be fair, I mean, they did just transition to FBS recently. In the last few years, they were an FCS school. They're kind of an up-and-coming program trying to make their name in FBS. And so right now, you just think for Atkins, if he can just hang on a little bit longer and they are able to get this thing rolling, he may have a little better opportunity. Obviously, I think Florida State can probably, you know, probably match pay, if not pay better, for their offensive coordinator versus what Charlotte's paying for their head coach. So he did get the OC designation, which does help him, you know, maybe stay, influence his decision to stay at Florida State. I think obviously if he was just an O-line coach, you would jump on that all day. But again, you don't know what Charlotte's looking for either. You know, that could just be rumor. So hopefully he stays around, but it is worth mentioning. And that kind of transitions into the next little bit of news that popped over the last few days. Roderick Kearney, offensive lineman, did flip his commitment to Florida. And so it's an unfortunate loss. Obviously, I'm not going to be that type of guy where, you know, I like the kid's commitment until he flipped it and now all of a sudden, you know, he's a trash player or anything like that. I'm definitely not saying that by any means. I think Kearney is a good player. He would have been nice to keep in the class. But, you know, realistically nowadays, commitments just don't mean anything. Like, verbal commitments don't. Or I'm not going to say they don't mean anything, but, you know, it's really hard to kind of count on a lot of these kids' commitments because they are young. They're 17, 18 years old, you know, if not younger when they commit. And so it's just hard to, it's really hard to honor anything until you get a, you know, until you get a signature on a paper, until that letter of intent is faxed in. I mean, even look at the kid from Clemson who just visited Florida State. Like, he decommitted and recommitted it within like a week. So this stuff is just, it's an ever-changing field. And honestly, with the portal nowadays, it's kind of, it's a moot point because, you know, let's just say Kearney goes to UF and it doesn't work out well. Atkins keeps touch. And then all of a sudden, you know, a year in, he's trying to come back to Florida State. Like, it's just a reality of college football as we know it nowadays. So, you know, truthfully, if I had to pick one of the two out of the class so far that they have committed, to leave, it would have been Kearney, because Lucas Simmons is a future, you know, he's a blue chip offensive tackle that projects high in the future. He's got a true tackle physique, a body that Florida State has not had in a while. So as long as you can keep him, you know, in the fold, I think you're good to go. They'll find somebody else, and truthfully, they could go out of the portal, which to me, I understand that, you know, the belief is you want to always recruit out of the high school level and build your program from those ranks. But with the way the portal has changed things, you know, it's hard not to think that where you better off, you know, you can still find guys in there. Like, not everybody's a grad transfer anymore, I guess is what I'm trying to say. You can still get guys who are sophomores, redshirt freshmen. You know, maybe their coach got fired. Maybe they committed and things aren't working out like they thought. And, you know, now they want to go try an opportunity somewhere else. And truthfully, at that point, you can get evaluation from college film. You can know a little better what you're getting from that player. So, you know, you just got to trust Atkins. He's been an elite recruiter, and he's really transformed this offensive line room since he's been here. So, you know, they signed a big class last year. They got a lot of guys in the fold. And you're just going to have to trust the process on this one. So, I mean, good luck to Kearney. Obviously, you hate to see him go to a rival, but it is what it is. And so, with that being said, we'll just kind of close that chapter and move on to the next. So, Florida State has a bye week that you hope – it was a much-needed bye week, too. It was, you know, coming off this three-game skid, it was nice to see them just kind of get a week off to rest, recuperate, get healthy, regroup, and right the ship. And you're hoping – you know, maybe they have a little newfound focus, and with getting some guys back and getting some guys healthy, because not everybody who has been out is really the depth of your injury. I mean, you got guys who, like Malcolm Ray, Derek McClendon, guys like that, who have been banged up in games, Jarrett Jackson, who are coming back and playing through, I'm assuming, some injuries. So it is beneficial for them to be able to get some time off. To get some treatment from the training staff and get healed up and ready for this back end of the season, which is a very important stretch for Florida State. Fabian Lovett has been practicing the last 2 weeks. They still say they're not 100% sure if he's going to play on Saturday. They're hoping to have him back. I think you do see him. I think you're going to get him on a limited snap count. And to be honest, even if you can get 20 snaps out of him, you know, because he's been out since the LSU game, so it's going to take a little bit to get him back in game shape. But if you can get, say, 20 or so snaps out of him, that's still going to be an improvement up front for your defensive line, where you have really missed his presence. And then you're going to help get him back in game shape without pushing him too hard for Miami and some of the, you know, the really important games down the stretch, which, to be fair, they're all important at this point in Florida State's juncture, because, you know, if you were to beat Georgia Tech and you were to beat Miami, and let's just say you win every game the rest of the season by 1 point. I mean, no one's going to care that you won by 1 point. You're still going to be 9-3, and people are still going to talk about that. That's great. But, you know, let's just say that over the next 2 weeks, you're looking back at a, I don't know, 4-point Georgia Tech win and like a 3-point win over Miami versus, say, a 30-point Georgia Tech win and a 20-point win over Miami or something like that. You just feel a lot better about the momentum and the trajectory and Florida State being able to handle its business against those teams that have not been playing well. So they're all important in the aspect of, you know, right now you're not necessarily playing for an ACC championship. You're not playing for the Atlantic. You're not playing for, you know, probably not a New Year's Six Bowl game at this point, unless there's just chaos towards the end of the season. You know, you're not going to make the playoffs, but right now you're playing for pride. You're playing for momentum, you're playing for recruiting, you're playing for, you know, the engaging the fan base and things like that, and that's something that this program needs. So, you know, they're all important, and really on the flip side of that, more importantly, if you win, that's great. It doesn't matter how much it's by, because like I said, in the end, people will forget it as long as you win with the final record. But if you lose to, say, a Georgia Tech, or if you lose to a Miami, even in a rivalry game against a team that's not looked good, it's not going to look good for the staff and for this program. So these are must-win games to me. You know, Syracuse is the one where you can, you know, if you lose that game, it's still to, you know, a ranked top 25 team on the road. You know, you may get a little leeway with that one, but to me, Florida State needs to finish at a minimum of 4-1, you know, maybe 3-2 at the worst. But I'm looking hopefully for 4-1. along this last stretch, maybe even 5-0. I mean, that would be really great. So just going to transition now into some of the things that we saw over the weekend. We're just going to recap some of the teams on Florida State's schedule and how they performed, talk about that a little bit, and then we'll get into the Georgia Tech preview. You know, I mean, listen, guys, Georgia Tech, Florida State's a 20-plus point favorite. They should walk all over these guys. So we're probably not going to go down in every, you know, follow every rabbit hole into every detail, but we are going to talk about them. But we're going to give you what you need to know on them. So just up first, you have LSU. Obviously, that win is looking better and better by the week for Florida State. They had a dominant win over a top 10 Ole Miss team. And man, that's turned into a really good win because LSU is sneaky good. You know, they have a bye week now before they take on Alabama at home at night. You know, there's a possibility. You know, I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but there's a possibility they could pull the upset, and they've turned into a pretty nice team this year. And realistically, that game looks like next year in Orlando looks like it just got a lot tougher. Louisville got a nice win over Pitt this weekend. And, you know, Pitt's kind of falling apart a little bit here lately. When you go back and look at their schedule, like they beat West Virginia. West Virginia's not any good. Really, sadly to say, I think their best game of the season was a loss to Tennessee, because every other game, when you look at who they played, they just haven't really beat anybody good. And now they've lost to Georgia Tech, and they kind of got, you know, beat down a little bit by Louisville. So, you know, the Louisville win does look a little better, which, again, guys, this is the one thing that I was saying. Pitt was really your favorite to win the Coastal between them and Miami. And so I do realistically feel like if you put Florida State in the Coastal, I mean, to me, they're playing for an ACC championship. There is no doubt about that, because that division is a wreck. And, you know, that leads me into the next game that we're going to talk about, which is Miami getting absolutely smoked by Duke. They had 8 turnovers in that game. I mean, it's all bad for them right now. Tyler Van Dyke went down with injury. And, you know, the funny thing to me about that was all the preseason hype they had. They were supposed to win the Coastal. They had a NFL draft pick at quarterback, and this was not a rebuild. This was just kind of a reload. You have an elite staff coming in, and everything that they had to say. And now all of a sudden, you've been blown out by Middle Tennessee State, who's 3-4 and second to last in the Conference USA. You've been blown out by Duke, who has been the doormat of the ACC for a long time. And so now, all of a sudden, now that this has happened, they're in a rebuild. So they moved the goalpost on this one again. And, you know, to be honest, like I said, this is something I said on social media, on Twitter earlier today, because Ruiz has been, and if you know who I'm talking about, the billionaire booster they have, has been kind of, you know, trying to carry the flag for Miami at a time that he probably shouldn't be. And my point, when he said that Miami was a national brand and was ahead of Florida State and Florida and things like that, is, man, like, Miami is a relic nowadays. It is a college football relic. It is like Blockbuster Video of college football. It's only significant to those who are old enough to remember it. You know, anybody under 30 probably doesn't remember any of Miami's success. I mean, I'm 34 years old, and I remember the championship game against Ohio State, but that's really about it. And, I mean, it's like, so what are you rebuilding? Like, you have 5,000 fans at a home game, and that's probably being generous. You've had one 10-win season. Like, and this was another point I made. So Miami's been in the ACC for 18 years now. This is their I think 18th season or 19th season this year. They have one 10-win season in that time, 3 sub-500 seasons, no New Year's Six or BCS Bowl wins, no playoff appearances, no conference titles. I mean, what are you rebuilding? This is the normal. This is the new normal for Miami. You're not rebuilding anything. I mean, is it? Like, this is, that program is a lot of history that hasn't been relevant in 2 decades. And so I don't really understand what they think they're rebuilding down there. And I don't understand, you know, I know you're in one of the most fertile recruiting grounds in the country, but, you know, they make it sound like, oh, well, kids love to play in Hard Rock in the NFL stadium. And it's like, man, even your own quarterback came out and said that he wants to play in a true college environment. And, you know, I just don't see how you're going to impress anybody at a home game when you have 4,000 fans and you're getting blown out by Duke and Middle Tennessee State. So, they got an uphill challenge. And I really do think that Cristobal is going to be okay at recruiting, but he's you know, this is what Oregon fans have been telling us all along, that he's just not that good of a coach, and this is something that they saw. And, you know, he even said this week that, oh, well, Oregon was 4-8 when we took over, and you have to build it the right way, and that's what we're trying to do here. And it's like, man, yeah, but Oregon had 10 or 7 consecutive 10-win seasons and a 9-win season with an NFL first-round draft pick in Justin Herbert that you inherited when you got there. It doesn't really sound like a rebuild to me. It sounds like you took over a pretty dominant program in a down Pac-12 that had one bad season. And, you know, so I don't see, like, I just don't see a path forward for Miami getting back, ever getting back to what they used to be. That's probably never going to happen. But, you know, it's just a lot of delusion down there with who they think they are. And, you know, speaking of Blockbuster, I'm sure when they closed that, there probably went half of Miami's championship highlight tapes when they threw out all the VHS tapes. So, I don't even know if you can find a VCR anymore to watch their highlight tape. So, that's really it on Miami. You know, we laugh at them and everything, but you're going to have to win next week. So, you know, all this is not going to mean anything if you go down there and lose to Miami. But it is going to be at 7:30. It is a primetime game. I guess, you know, if Florida State coming in town, you're welcome, Miami. You finally got a primetime game when a different team comes to town. But that program is just a wreck right now. And yet they're still clinging to those dusty old national championships. So, you know, it's just kind of funny to watch. It's funny to watch them implode after, you know, their head barely fit through the door preseason because of who they thought they were going to be. And, you know, all 5 fans took to Twitter to really make some noise. And now it's almost like they've just disappeared off the map. So it is pretty funny to watch. The other game I want to talk about real quick was Clemson and Syracuse. Obviously, it was a pretty close game at home. You know, like I said, I didn't have cell phone service. I wasn't really able to watch it. I heard the ACC refs did ACC ref things, and they kept Clemson alive in that game, which is, you know, it's just ridiculous the way these refs are nowadays in this conference. And I did see some of the, you know, side-by-side video clips where things were called for Clemson and not for them. And, you know, my ultimate takeaway is, of course, Clemson has the game where they have to bench DJ and where they bring in Klubnik, and he doesn't look all that great. You know, they couldn't have had that last week against us on the road, you know, where Florida State could have got a huge upset win, but instead you have it at home and you still end up beating Syracuse. So, I mean, of course, go figure. You know, Clemson waits till the week after FSU game to have an off week. But, you know, it is what it is. That's the game, and sometimes that's just the way things shake out. So, with that being said, we'll go ahead and transition into the Georgia Tech preview, and we'll go ahead and talk about them real quick so we don't have to be here too long talking about a game that Florida State should win. They should dominate in this game. Like I said, they opened as a 20.5-point favorite. I believe it's up to 22 or 23 points now. FSU comes into this game at 4-3, 2-3 in the ACC, and 4-3 against the spread. Georgia Tech is 3-4, 2-2 in the ACC, and 3-4 against the spread. Strength of schedule-wise, Georgia Tech has actually played a pretty hard schedule, unlike a lot of FSU's recent opponents. Florida State is currently at the 11th hardest schedule in the country, and Georgia Tech has played the 14th. Now, we didn't expect Georgia Tech to be good in the preseason anyway, but then a hard schedule certainly didn't help that. We knew Jeff Collins, you know, he took on a really hard task of navigating away from the triple option, and that was not going to be easy, and it was going to take time to get a different style of athletes in there to run his system. But we knew that, you know, Paul Johnson had some success with the triple option, at least making bowl games and having winning seasons. So, you know, with the lack of success that they've had, we knew that he was probably going to be coaching for his job this year. And so when you look at the win probability for this game, ESPN gives Florida State a 90.9% chance of winning the game, and PFF is at 92.2% chance. I think a lot of this does kind of aim, when you see the big spread and things like that, just kind of does aim that Sims will probably not be playing. He was injured in the end of the Duke game. They said that he was kind of day-to-day, nursing that injury coming into the UVA game, and then he left that game in the second quarter and returned in street clothes for the second half. So it doesn't look like he's going to play in this game. Georgia Tech's coach did say, their interim coach said, that they expect the Zach Gibson to play and another Zach to play behind him, who is going to be, it's going to be his first college experience in his first game. And to me, now I don't know if there's some injury concerns or something like that. I'm not 100% sure, but they did take Clemson transfer, and I'm going to butcher his name, but I think it's Tyson Pumacan. They took him in the offseason in the transfer portal. So I'm really not sure where he went. It's almost like he disappeared off the depth chart. I'm not sure what's going on there, but it does sound like Florida State's going to kind of get a mixture of two backup quarterbacks. And realistically for Georgia Tech, I mean, if Jeff Sims is kind of the best player you have right now in this game, you know, you're already a 20-point underdog on the road. I just don't see risk in his future. You know, you just let him sit out at this point. I mean, you're 3-4. You're not trying to get a kid hurt, playing him through injury in a game you're probably not going to win. But, you know, at the same time, you can't ignore the fact that, you know, Florida State did get beat by Georgia Tech in Mike Norvell's homecoming. They did get, you know, they've been upset in kind of crazy fashion the time they met before that with the blocked field goal return. So, I mean, you can never turn your back on a team like Georgia Tech. You can never turn your back on a team like Miami, even when they're down in a rivalry game. You have to still show up and you have to play a good level of football. You can't play down to the competition or else this team can beat you. You know, just ask Pitt how that worked out. They were ranked 24th whenever Georgia Tech beat them. So just looking at kind of some roster stuff, the PFF 70-plus graded players, which if you guys listen to this podcast before, you know that we've talked about PFF. It's not the gospel, but it's pretty good at identifying impact players. 70-plus graded players are kind of the general consensus of Power 5 quality starters. And I use a minimum of 50 snaps because it's kind of easy to influence your grade if you haven't played a whole lot. So Florida State has 13 total, 7 on offense, 8 if you count Micah Pittman, who's at 69.9, and then 6 on defense. Georgia Tech has 7 total, 1 on offense, and 6 on defense. So, you know, their defense is their strength, and especially without Jeff Sims, it's just going to be a tall task for them to come in here and beat Florida State on the road. So, obviously, like we talked about earlier, the last meeting in 2020 to open the season, Georgia Tech did win 16-13 and kind of spoiled Mike Norvell's coming out party at FSU. You know, in my opinion, I don't know if this is on the back of Mike Norvell's mind or not. Maybe there's a little revenge factor there. Maybe not. Like I said earlier, if I'm Florida State, I'm not letting off the gas these next 2 weeks. You have some winnable games that you should be able to open up. And to me, I'm trying to get some style points, you know, just to make your team look good, just to make, you know, you just feel a lot better if you're able to beat these bad teams how you're supposed to. And so then points per game, we're looking at Florida State at 30.9 points per game, Georgia Tech down at 16.1. Points allowed per game, Florida State is currently at 22.7. Georgia Tech is giving up 26.3 points per game. As far as penalties go, average penalties per game, Georgia Tech is at 6.43, which is 72nd in the country. Now, one area, like Georgia Tech is not all bad, and I'm going to tell you how the one area you cannot let them hang around in this game. Georgia Tech, very impressively, is plus 10 in turnover margin. They are fourth in the country in turnovers. They do not turn it over a whole lot, and they actually create a fair amount of turnovers. So, you know, that's really one of the ways, like when you look at some of the games they played, that's how they got some of these, that's how they upset Pitt. You know, that was just one of the things that you have to play a clean game against these guys. Again, you know, it's like my high school coach used to always say, you have to kill a gnat with a sledgehammer. Because if you let him hang around too long, just swatting at him and playing around with him, he's eventually going to get you. And so that's the same principle with this team. If you turn it over, if you play sloppy, if you give them a lot of extra at-bats, you could find yourself, throwing punches in the fourth quarter with a team like Georgia Tech that you shouldn't be. So speaking of those games, we're just going to run through their schedule and results real quick. So game one, we know they lost 41-10 versus Clemson in Atlanta in a neutral site game. Clemson, in that game, we talked about this during their preview, it actually wasn't quite as nasty as the score made it look. That game was 17-10 with a minute and 18 left in the third quarter. So Georgia Tech actually gave them fits before Clemson was able to pull off late. Clemson put up 378 yards in that game. Georgia Tech put up 237 yards and only 73 rushing yards, 164 pass. Again, first game of the season. I thought Georgia Tech actually looked respectable in that game until it got away from them pretty late. 35-17 over Western Carolina was their second game of the season and was their first win. In that game, they still got outgained by Western Carolina despite winning. They put up 343 yards, only 100 yards passing against Western Carolina. And I looked that game up a little deeper in the box score just to see, like, did Sims get benched? Did something happen? And no, he was 8-17 for 100 yards and a pick against Western Carolina. So that's just, you know, it wasn't good. Now, they did manage to run for 243 yards, But like I said, they did get outgained in that game. Western Carolina, who is an FCS program, put up 390 yards of offense. And Western Carolina in that game had 4 turnovers and 7 penalties, you know, which is, again, what we talked about. That's kind of how Georgia Tech is able to get some wins, even in their current state of their program, is by capitalizing off other teams' mistakes. And which, even then, that game was a one-score game with 2 minutes left until halftime. So they were, you know, Western Carolina was hanging around there for a little while. Game 3, 42-0 loss to Ole Miss at home. And, you know, Ole Miss is, they were a top 10 team. So, I mean, you expected them to lose that game, maybe not quite that bad. Because I feel like Ole Miss, you know, they just got pounded by LSU. I feel like maybe they're kind of maybe they were a little overrated. With just some of the limitations that they have at the quarterback position and things there. But Georgia Tech only put up 214 yards of offense in that game. Ole Miss put up 547 yards on them, 316 yards on the ground. So, I mean, you've already seen, you know, things weren't looking good for them. And then you give up over 300 yards of rushing on the ground. And, you know, that game wasn't fluky, because I always try and look for more context about these games. And it wasn't some kind of fluke game. Georgia Tech had 0 turnovers and only 4 penalties in that game. And, you know, it was already 21-0 at halftime. So that was just a good old-fashioned beatdown by Ole Miss over Georgia Tech. Going on to game 4, 27-10, a loss to UCF on the road. This was the game that got Jeff Collins fired. Well, not this particular game, but this was the game where he got fired. In that game, they did outgain UCF. They put up 452 yards, which UCF defense is just not all that good. But they did put up 314 passing yards in that game. And I was kind of like, wow, really? And yeah, I mean, Sims put up over 300 yards. So he's just wildly inconsistent. Like, he'll throw for 300 yards one game, 100 yards for one game, 200 plus in one game, 100 yards in a game. They just don't make any sense. But UCF only put up 333 yards in that game. They only had 49 yards passing, which is just disgusting. 284 yards rushing. So again, now Georgia Tech in back-to-back weeks gave up over 300 yards of rushing and 284 yards of rushing on the ground. So, you know, seeing Florida State put up over 200 yards rushing on Clemson's defense, who at the time was, like, I believe, the number 2 rush defense in the country, you feel pretty good about what you're going to get, be able to get going on the ground with your backs there. So again, that was one where it wasn't really a fluky game. There was only 2 turnovers per team. Both of them had 2 turnovers. Georgia Tech did miss 2 field goals and had a punt block for a touchdown. Game 5 was the biggest, best win of the season for Georgia Tech. They beat Pitt on the road, who was 24th at the time, 26-21, in what was really kind of a shocking victory over Pitt, because, you know, Pitt looked like they were going to be a coastal contender in the preseason. So Georgia Tech put up 334 yards in that game. Again, only 102 passing yards, but 232 yards on the ground. And Pitt put up 411 yards and 305 through the air, 106 on the ground. So they outgained them. But again, here's what we're talking about. Pitt had 12 penalties and 3 turnovers in that game. So Georgia Tech is that type of team that they'll hang around and wait for you to make mistakes, and they will take advantage of that. So, you know, you just got to play a clean game against these guys, or they can upset you. Game 6 was a 23-20 overtime win versus Duke. Total yards in that game, Georgia Tech put up 412 yards, 232 passing, 180 on the ground. So they're a pretty solid running team with Jeff Sims at quarterback, which, if he's not playing in this game, that's a huge hit to their rushing attack. Duke only put up 278 yards in that game. And again, they had a punt return for a touchdown by Duke and a turnover. So it really wasn't like a fluky game. They were able to come out and just beat them. So that was a good win for Georgia Tech. Obviously, you know, Duke being the powerhouse that they are, that they just blew out the team in Coral Gables. So Game 7, the recent one we saw on Thursday night, they lost 16-9 to UVA. In that game, they only put up 206 yards. Jeff Sims did have to leave that game in the second quarter, like we said, and their offense pretty much fell flat on its face after that. UVA was able to put up over 400 yards on them, 255 pass, 155 on the ground. UVA also had 10 penalties and 4 turnovers in that game, and were still able to overcome that and win the ball game, which just speaks to how bad Georgia Tech's offense turned out to be once Jeff Sims left. And not that it was great beforehand either, really. So Georgia Tech in that game had 7 penalties and 2 turnovers of their own. Once Gibson, Zach Gibson came in relief for Jeff Sims, he went 10 of 25 for 99 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions, and was sacked 7 times. So you have some opportunities to really open some things up against Georgia Tech. Now, of course, going all week as probably the presumed starter, you know, you may see some things change there. You know, he may have a little better game. And honestly, he had some decent throws. He had a little zip on the ball. You know, he does run. He is quick. I'm not going to say he's fast. He's not the runner that Sims is. You know, when he gets free, he runs towards the sideline. But he will scramble on you at least. So, Florida State does, you know, they've played. You definitely would rather have him than Sims. I would say that just because of his running ability. And you saw how Cunningham and you saw how Jaden Daniels kind of were able to run the ball. Those mobile quarterbacks gave Florida State some fits earlier in the season. So, you know, I'm certainly not going to be sad if Jeff Sims is not playing in this game. Not that you're like scared of Jeff Sims, but you know, those mobile quarterbacks can always give you a fit. So looking at their offense, so far they have averaged this season 69.4 plays per game. They do like to run the hurry up a little bit. Now, I'm not sure how Zach Gibson being the quarterback is going to affect that because I'm not sure if he's familiar enough with this playbook as a first-year transfer to be able to run that type of offense. So they do run the ball around 41.5% of the time and pass it around 58.5%. I suspect you'll probably see a little more heavy on the pass side of things with Gibson in and Sims out. Total offense is pretty bad, guys. I mean, almost every category is near the bottom. Total offense, 118th. Success rate, 117th. EPA rank on offense is 127th. Passing offense is 115th. Rushing offense is 85th. So it's pretty grim for those guys. And again, they possibly just lost their leading rusher in Jeff Sims. It's just not good news for them, unfortunately. So third down offense, they've, again, 122nd in the country. Only converting under 30% of their attempts. Red zone offense, 130th, second to last in the country. And of their 15 trips in the red zone, 8 of those have been field goals. You know, they're just the more I read, the worse it gets. So 26 sacks allowed this season, 3.71 per game, is 125th in the country. Tackles for loss allowed also comes in at 124th, allowing 8.57 per game. So just looking at the passing profile for each quarterback, if Jeff Sims surprises everybody and comes out of the locker room and plays, he is obviously their best option at quarterback. He has a 58.5% completion percentage for 1,114 yards on the season, 5 touchdowns, 3 picks, you know, decent big-time throw rate and turnover-worthy play rate, not anything crazy. He can throw the ball pretty well. He just doesn't have a lot of weapons to work with, and he's behind a pretty bad offensive line. So his adjusted completion percentage is 67.2, which counts for drops and throwaways, and Georgia Tech does have a lot of drops. He's been pressured 79 times for 18 sacks, and you can tell that his ability does help them out a lot. The amount of pressures that turn into sacks have only been about 22.8%. When you look at what Gibson has done since he's been in, the pressure to sack ratio is 36.8%. So you feel like if you can get some pressure on him, you do have a pretty good chance to get him down. Jeff Sims' PFF grade is 64.4, and his QBR is 42.3, which is 98th in the country. Again, I said he is their leading rusher, 49 attempts, 405 yards, 5.7 yards per carry, 1 touchdown, 2 fumbles, and a PFF run grade of 74. So if he does play, you know, I don't know that he's going to be 100%, so I'm not sure how, you know, how well he'll be able to run the ball, but it sounds like they're going to rest him, so... With that being said, we're just going to move forward, assuming that Zach Gibson is the starter here. So he is an Akron transfer, 6'3", 211. He has 50 total snaps at Georgia Tech, 48 versus UVA. So I think he played, like they said, the overtime against Duke and then basically the second half and second quarter of the UVA game once Sims got hurt. So on the season, he's 11 of 27, which is a 40.7% completion percentage. 104 yards, no touchdowns, no picks. Big-time throw rate of 6.9%, which is pretty good. I mean, I did see him make some decent throws in the UVA game, and a lot of them just got broken up or dropped. He has a turnover-worthy play rate of 2.5%, which isn't bad. He's been pressured 19 times and 7 sacks in, like, barely even a full game. Probably not even a full game. He's already been sacked 7 times and 19 pressures, so... it's probably going to be, if you get Fabian Lovett back, even in limited capacity, and you got Jared Verse, who's had a week off to get healthy and stuff like that, it might be a long night for this guy. I mean, I feel bad for him. Not really, but it's probably going to be a pretty long night back there behind this offensive line that Georgia Tech has. His PFF grades are 51.6, PFF pass is 63.2, and PFF run grade is 33.6. That's not good. Quarterback rating is 7.1 is QBR. That's and he does have a fumble on the season as well. So in Akron, when we look back at what he was able to do prior to Georgia Tech, so in 2019 and 2020, he had a pretty rough go of it. Sub 43 PFF grades. He had more interceptions than touchdowns. But in fairness, in 2021, he did kind of get things turned around a little bit. He had a 69.4% completion percentage, 1,260 yards passing, 10 touchdowns, and no picks with a PFF grade of 91.2. So, he can throw the ball. It's just he's been wild. He's only really had one okay season, and that was at Akron. He does have 65 career sacks. So, that's got to be tough to just get beat up a lot. So, hopefully we see more of that on Saturday. As far as his pressured passing stats, when he's kept clean, which has been 50% of the time, his completion percentage is 47.1%, 78 yards, no touchdowns, no picks, PFF grade of 56.9. He does have a big-time throw rate of 11.1%, but I think it was literally like two throws, so that's hard to judge. This is why we do a 50-snap minimum, and I know he's right at 50 snaps, but it's just hard to judge a lot of these percentages when you don't have a lot to go off of. When he is pressured, his completion percentage drops down to 30%, 26 yards, and a no touchdowns, no picks, PFF grade of 59.6. So, we'll see. I'm pretty sure they're going to roll with Gibson, is what it sounds like. And the other guy that they're going to play, the other Zach that they're going to play, has not even played in a college game yet. So it just sounds like it's going to be a rough Saturday for Georgia Tech, with just playing backups and guys who don't have any experience. So so far this season, just in his one game, Zach Gibson, as far as downfield passing, behind the line of scrimmage has been around 18.5%. Short throws have been 33.3%. Mid-range throws have been 11.1%, and deep has been 25.9%. So they may air it out a little bit more with him. He does have a pretty low completion percentage there, but most quarterbacks do. And he does have a pretty good big-time throw rate on his 20-plus yard throws, which is the deep throw. So you may see a little more deep passes with them. As far as the impact players for Georgia Tech, who we're kind of watching here, who to look out for, first up you have wide receiver Nate McCollum, 5'11", 184 pounds. He plays slot around 96% of the time. He is their highest targeted receiver. He is a 34 catches on 46 targets, which is a 73.9% catch rate, 344 yards, one touchdown, one drop, and his contested catch rate is 37.5%. So if you can challenge him for the ball, you can probably limit his receptions. PFF grade is 68.2. Next up, you have Malachi Carter, who is one of their bigger receivers, 6'3", 192, lines up out wide a majority of the time. 13 catches on 25 targets, 201 yards, one touchdown, one drop. PFF grade of 59.3. And for a bigger receiver at 6'3", 192, his contested catch rate is only 33.3%. He's caught 2 of 6 contested catches. So, the DBs, they're going to have a little bit of a challenge with some of their bigger receivers that they have. But, there's just not a whole lot of talent out wide for these guys. So, as long as you come to play, I think they can have a successful day. One other guy to watch that I will say is kind of like our Johnny Wilson is EJ Jenkins. He's 6'7", 243 pounds, lines up out wide 97% of the time. He has 11 catches on 25 targets, only a 44% reception rate, 160 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 4 drops. He has dropped 27% of his targets. So even then, his contested catch rate is 50%, 3 of 6. So even a guy who's 6'7", 243, just not really able to use his size efficiently, PFF grade of 61. And I will say they must like to use him in the red zone because he is the only player with multiple touchdown catches on the Georgia Tech receiving core, on the team, should I say. They only have 3 wide receivers with 100-plus yards receiving, only 1 with multiple touchdown catches. So they just haven't been able to get a whole lot going through the air there. For reference, Florida State has 6 receivers with over 100 yards receiving and 4 with multiple touchdown catches. At running back, they have Hassan Hall, kind of their lead guy, 6', 196. He has 73 attempts, 377 yards, 5.2 yards a carry, has not scored a rushing touchdown this season, and he's not fumbled as well. PFF grade is 70.9. Doesn't do a whole lot out of the backfield. 17 catches for 89 yards on the season. The other running back that they turned to, which to me flashed a little bit in the UVA game, was Dante Smith, 5'11", 203, 44 attempts, 241 yards, 5.5 yards per carry, 3 touchdowns, and no fumbles. So, you know, his PFF grade 69.6. So he's a decent back. Doesn't do a whole lot out of the backfield as well as far as catching the ball. 6 catches, 29 yards, no touchdowns. So, I mean, Sims was the leading rusher on this team, which did kind of help open things up for the backs. If he's not there, I don't know how much they're going to be able to get going. But, you know, 2 backs that average over 5 yards a carry isn't bad. And running the ball is the one thing Georgia Tech was kind of able to do, having a dual threat quarterback. So if he's out, man, it's just this could get ugly for Georgia Tech, and I really hope that is the case. So when you look at their offensive line up front, it has been a struggle for them. They do have a lot of young guys, and it's not gone well. They do have size up front. I mean, they're all 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", pushing 300 or over 300 pounds. So they have some size, just not a whole lot of experience. So, I mean, for instance, your left tackle, he's a redshirt freshman, PFF grade of 51.8. He's allowed 5 sacks this season. Your left guard is a redshirt sophomore. He's an Alabama transfer, but he only played 33 snaps at Alabama. PFF grade is 56.9, allowed 3 sacks this season. The center, he is a true sophomore, PFF grade of 52.1. He's allowed 1 sack this season. The right guard, he is a redshirt freshman, PFF grade of 56.5, allowed 2 sacks. And your right tackle is a true sophomore with a PFF grade of 54.5 and allowed 6 sacks this season. So, you know, they got decent size, but they don't have a lot of experience. They're young. They have no upperclassmen up front, and they've all graded out pretty much every game but Western Carolina. It's been pretty poorly graded. So, you know, that has a lot to do with why they're 125th in sacks and 124th in tackles for loss. So, you know, if you get Fabian Lovett back, you feel good about what this defensive line can do in this game. You know, and just to sum up the Georgia Tech offense, it's been bad this season. They've been bottom tier in almost every category with Jeff Sims. So without him, you have to imagine that struggle is only going to get worse, because when he came out, the offense just fell flat against UVA. And now, I mean, UVA has an okay defense. I think they're 34th in the country. They do like to run a little bit of tempo, which, again, I'm not sure that we're going to see a whole lot of if Gibson is back there. And 2 things that I did note on the Georgia Tech offense, they have not scored more than 2 offensive touchdowns in a game this season versus an FBS team. So if you take out the FCS game, every game this season, not one of them had they scored more than 2 offensive touchdowns. They've had a couple, they've had a pick six and some other kind of scores. So it's just, you know, you feel like if you can get to, they shouldn't score over 20 points, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And their field goals have been, they had to make a change at kicker. We're going to talk about special teams in a minute, but they're not real good at special teams either. So you feel like you should have no problem holding them under 20 points. That would be something that I don't feel would be out of the realm for Florida State. Now, they have faced some good defenses. I do have to give them credit there. When you look at who they faced so far, you have Clemson at 27th, Pitt at 28th, UVA at 39th, UCF at 46th, Ole Miss at 55th, Duke at 86th, and an FCS school. And Florida State currently sits at 25th in total defense. So Florida State's going to be one of the better defenses that they're going to face. You know, I don't know that Florida State's defense is better than Clemson. You know, they're statistically they might be, but they're going to be one of the better defenses that Georgia Tech's going to face. So like I said, you feel good about holding them, you know, almost, I would say less than 20, but you would hope maybe even less than that. So now we'll move over to the defensive side of things. It is a little better, but it's still pretty grim for Georgia Tech on this side of the ball as well. Total defense, they're currently 84th. Success rate on defense, they're 90th. Passing defense is 47th. And then the rush defense is 101st. Success rate against the run is 117th. So I really do feel like Florida State's going to be able to get their ground game going this game and get the ball moving to open up some things in the pass. But like I said, if you can put up 200-plus yards on Clemson's defense against that front and the way we saw the offensive line perform in that game, I think they're going to have no problem getting the ball rolling on the ground here. At least you would hope so. So third down defense, they're 40th in the country. Red zone defense, they're 71st in the country. They do have 132 pressures on the year, which is pretty impressive. They are 58th in sacks at 2.14 per game. Tackles for loss per game, they are 15th. They do get 7.1 tackles per game, which is pretty impressive. And I credit a lot of that to they have some pretty good linebackers. They are 17th in interceptions as well with 9 this season. So, again, that's what we talked about is this team is pretty opportunistic at turnovers. So you're going to have to play a clean game and not give them too many extra possessions or else they will hang around. So when I looked at their defensive personnel, they have some pieces on defense. Now, that's something that they lack on the offensive side of the ball, but they do have some talent on the defense. They just have a lot of holes too. For instance, like when you look at one of their defensive ends, number 6 has a PFF grade of 78.3, 21 pressures, 3 sacks on the season. When you flip over to the other side, the defensive end number 9 has a PFF grade of 56.1, only 9 pressures and 1 sack. So up front at defensive tackle, you have one defensive tackle, number 99, who was a guy, he flashed a little bit to me in the Clemson game when I watched it. He has a PFF grade of 74.2. And then the other defensive tackle, number 8, has a PFF grade of 52.4. So you can see there's inconsistencies on this team. Like I said, they have a pretty good linebacking core, number 1 being their leading tackler, PFF grade of 73.9, 13 pressures, 1 sack. He's not that great in coverage, but he does have 2 interceptions. So he does allow an 83% reception rate. But like I said, he has 2 picks and a PBU, so you know, they have a pretty good linebacking core. Number 2 is their other linebacker, number 1 and number 2. He has a PFF grade of 68.1, 21 pressures, 3 sacks. He is their second leading tackler. He has 3 forced fumbles on the season. He's a grad transfer from Maryland. So he's not as good in coverage as he is the run, which is evident in his PFF grades where he is at 74.1 against the run and 53.7 against coverage. So, you know, you can still get some mismatches on this guy or on the linebackers and still have some success, but this is one of their strongest points on the defense. Their secondary is actually pretty good. They're a more a little bit of a more experienced group at a few positions. They have 2 corners who are both redshirt juniors, both with PFF grades above 70. So, you know, you're going to have to be patient with getting the pass game off. You're going to have to let that run game open it up. And they do have another corner, the third corner they like to use, number 16. He is a redshirt sophomore, a Notre Dame transfer. He does have a PFF grade of 53.4. He is by far their highest targeted receiver. He is allowed 24 receptions on 39 targets, 312 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So, you know, there's some guys that you can pick on there. As far as their safeties go, number 20, he is pretty good now. He has a PFF grade of 85.4. I believe he was the one that had to pick 6 against UVA, but he has allowed 13 catches on 18 targets. So he must play the ball because he does have 2 interceptions and 5 PBUs. So, you know, he's probably one of those guys that he's either going to come down with a pick or you're going to be able to catch it over top of him. And the other safety that they use looks like he may have taken over at some point due to injury or, you know, a poor play or whatever. But because he is a true freshman, number 29. His PFF grade is 69.4, which isn't bad, but when you look into the numbers a little bit more, I think what they're doing is they're letting him come down into the box and play the run a little bit because he's a freshman and not making him do as much pass coverage. Because when you look at his stats, he has allowed 5 catches on 6 targets, which is an 83.3% reception rate, and he currently has a run defense grade of 90, which is really good, but a coverage grade of 60.1. So like I said, I don't think they're putting him in those positions to have to make the big plays a whole lot, which is smart by that staff. So on defense, like I said, they have some decent veteran pieces with good PFF grades. It's just not a good unit overall. You know, they just don't have a ton of talent just in general at Georgia Tech. So like I said, you hope you can have some success on offense against them. You know, you were able to run for over 200 yards against Clemson. You've been able to have some success passing, and I feel like this should be a game that you can kind of get your offense back on track, get everything right, get everything going again, get in sync, and move the ball on this defense. You know, I would think Florida State should be able to get into the 30s on this defense without too much issue. You know, as long as you play a clean, smart game, you don't have drive-killing penalties and turnovers and things like that. Now, one other area to talk about is special teams, because I do feel like it is going to play a pivotal role in this game. Maybe not like a game-deciding factor, but I think it will be something that will show up. They are 35th in kick return, 77th in kick return defense. They're 30th in punt return, but they are 128th in punt return defense. They are also 130th in net punting at only 31.56 yards because they do allow almost 17 yards per return. The biggest factor in special teams for me, though, they have allowed 5 blocked punts this season already. And when you watch their game, when you watch them punt, every single time they punt the ball, you're like, and they're going to get it, and he got it off. It's so close to being blocked every single time. So I'm sure Florida State staff has watched that. I'm sure Papuchis has seen that on film, and they're probably going to send, you know, they're going to come after a few of these. And I think they you know, hey, a little hot take. I think Florida State blocks a punt this game, or at least a kick, because which that's not really a hot take, but because they've allowed 9 block kicks so far this year, 5 punts and 4 kicks. So that's the other thing. They've had 4 blocked field goals so far this year. So again, you're just looking at, you know, something that Florida State has been pretty good at, they're really bad at. And so this could be an advantage FSU big time in that game. Like I said, they've used 2 kickers. It's kind of been the tale of 2 kickers. So their first kicker was 7-7 on PATs, 2-6 on field goals. Obviously, you see where the 4 blocks came from. Since they have changed kickers, he's been 4-5 on PATs, which he missed one in the UVA game, but he's been 8-8 on field goals. So, you know, he may kick the ball different to where it's not as easy to block, but, you know, you still have 5 block punts on the season, which could be an opportunity for Florida State. And so they're 0-1 for 50 plus, but 3-3 from 40 to 49. So they do have a little bit of range there. And that's pretty much it for special teams. Like I said, it's just they have a high number of block kicks allowed. And so I do think Florida State may be able to go back there and get one. You know, maybe you get a special teams touchdown in this game. That would be nice. I mean, like I said, guys, this is just one of them where you just want to see Florida State open a can up on somebody and just really kind of get that momentum back on track, get the winning back on track in a big fashion as you head into a big rivalry game next week against Miami. No matter what their record is, no matter the state of what Miami looks like right now, you know, you can't get caught looking ahead. You cannot come out flat for a noon game, you know, make some mistakes, have some penalties, have some turnovers, looking ahead to Miami, you know, and get sucker punched by Georgia Tech, because, you know, obviously they did it to Pitt. Obviously, you know, they were able to beat Duke. So it's like, and that's not saying a whole lot, you know, but they are a team where if you let them hang around, they can beat you. But to me, I just see this one without Jeff Sims. You know, if he does play, if he does manage to play, but he's not 100%, I still think it's going to be a tough task for Georgia Tech to come into Duke Campbell and beat Florida State coming off a bye week. Obviously, they played a Thursday game, so they did have a couple extra days to prepare as well. But, you know, I without Sims, I just think it's – and you can never really predict what a backup quarterback is going to do, but, you know, I do think it's going to be tough sledding for Gibson if he does have to play, and a guy who's never played in a college game before. You know, it almost feels like Georgia Tech is kind of waving the white flag in this one in a way to, you know, obviously they're still going to show up and play and they want to win, you know, but they're going to start rotating some guys at quarterback to get some experience and things going forward. Because, you know, I don't know if this interim coach is trying to get the job or not. I'm sure everybody is. So for me in this one, assuming there's no Sims or Sims not at 100%, I could see Florida State getting this one like 34-10, 34-13, somewhere in there. Just a nice victory for Florida State at home to get things back on track and right the ship as we head into Miami. So we'll go ahead and we'll wrap it up here, guys. I do appreciate everybody listening. I wanted to go ahead and try and get this out early for you and kind of combine everything into one podcast because I may be going to Jacksonville this Saturday for the Georgia-Florida game. My wife, she is a Georgia fan. You know, bless her heart, not everybody's able to be a Seminole. That's okay. I forgive her. But we may be headed down there for that game. So I wanted to be able to get, I'm not sure what my timeline for the week is, so I wanted to get everything out early for you. And one last thing before we wrap up, I did want to take a second to say thank you. There's been a few people on social media who have really given me some positive feedback, some high praise, mentioning me with the names of some larger podcasts and telling me just how much they really enjoy the show. And for me to be new, this is only the 20th episode without the instant reactions that I've been able to do. And to be able to be mentioned with those names is really special, and it really means a lot to me. So you guys know who you are, I've interacted with you, you know, once you posted the review on social media. So I just wanted to give you guys a shout out. You know, if you're listening, you know who you are, and I really appreciate that. So yeah, you guys have a great rest of your week, and I look forward to watching Florida State get back in action on Saturday, and hopefully they can open up a can on Georgia Tech and get a little payback for that, the last couple of losses that they've handed Florida State. So this is a get-right game, and hopefully Florida State can get right and move on to that rivalry game next week, which I'm excited for. I'm going to try and have a lot of content because it's Miami week. I'm pumped already. I'm trying not to look ahead to that one. But let's see how Florida State does this Saturday. I think they get a nice, comfortable win over Florida State, or excuse me, over Georgia Tech. So, yeah, thanks, guys. We'll catch you on the other side. Thanks for listening, and go Noles.